Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina, my fourth episode hosting the SI Media Podcast. Glad to be with you. Good show today. Two interviews. First up will be Jeff Van Gundy, ESPN NBA analyst, talk about the NBA playoffs and his job and a lot of other things. And then after Jeff, you'll hear from one of the hosts of the enormously popular Something to Wrestle With podcast. If you have followed anything I've written on Train of Thoughts on SI.com every day, you know I'm a huge fan of the Something to Wrestle With podcast, kind of obsessed with it. And there was huge news this week. There's going to be a separate version now of the podcast going to the WWE Network. And in the wrestling world, that's a big deal. So you're going to hear from Conrad about that deal. So we'll have Jeff Van Gundy, Conrad Thompson on this episode of the SI Media Podcast. My producer in studio, Lou Pellegrino. Lou, how's it going?
Mets are 9-1 as we're recording this, so it's pretty good. In a very good mood, yes.
The Yankees are a disaster, but I'm still in a good mood. I'm not worried.
Listen, I'm joking with the whole, you know, Mets 9-1 record. It's nice after 10 games, and it's fun as a fan, but, you know, it's early.
If you're a Met fan, you should be talking trash.
Nah,
flying
I don't
on
do
cloud
that.
Nine,
you should be I don't
happy.
Do that.
Listen, any team goes 9-1 to start the season, have fun with it. Roll with it. You know?
Yeah.
I think, listen, as long as the Mets are healthy, the Mets are going to be fine. It's, you know, you just got to hope their rotation stays healthy.
That's sure. All. Well, it's a long season.
We've got Conrad on. You did not watch the Andre the Giant documentary?
I have not watched it yet. I have it ready to go. I had a bunch of stuff, podcast related, editing, and other things to do last night.
I won't give anything away, but highly recommend it. I saw it.
Listen,
HBO, Simmons, they did a great job.
My wife wants to watch it.
Yeah.
So right there tells me that this is something that is epic and unbelievably good, and I can't wait. Tonight. Yeah. Sometime later this evening, as we're taping this on a Wednesday, so when people hear this, I will have watched it already, but I'm going to watch it at some point today.
Good, because you don't want to wait on that.
It's
really good.
It's been killing me to go on social media because I don't want to see any comments
on it. Yeah. That's the one problem this day and age is you can't wait to watch something. All right, so Mets are hot, Lou's happy. Yankees are a disaster, but I'm okay. NBA playoffs begin Saturday. Looking forward to them with Houston being able to give Golden State a run, which is nice. And then, of course, LeBron just brings so much intrigue. So it'll be very interesting to hear what Jeff Van Gundy has to say about that. So.
Mm-hmm.
That will be this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Let's get it rolling right now with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, how are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm going to start with something totally ridiculous, but you are a coach. Even though you're an analyst, you're still a coach. And with the playoffs beginning Saturday, I'm just curious, because it is a story whether people want to admit it or not. If you're Tyronn Lue, do you have to address this Tristan Thompson situation, or do you, it's his personal life and you don't even bother?
I would think with anything personal, and this goes for anybody in the NBA, that becomes public, like you would definitely check with that person to see how he was doing, if you can be of any help.
Right.
I think his teammates would do the same, but I don't think you would address it in front of the team.
Right, but with him one-on-one would be the way to go.
Yeah, I think... Yeah. It wouldn't matter what the personal issue is, whether it was public or private. You certainly would, you know, check in to see. You know, and all players are different. Some want help. Some want to handle their stuff by themselves. So you certainly check in, but it's not something you would address with the team.
Right. It's just this one's so big. This isn't just your typical, you know, it's bigger than a regular personal issue. So that's why I thought, with the playoffs here set, you know, if it's the middle of, you know, November, maybe you could get away with not having it be that much of a big deal. But if the playoffs are beginning Saturday, obviously there's going to be a lot of attention to it, whether they like it or not. Because it's one of those things that's branched out beyond sports. Once it branches out beyond sports, then it's a, you know, an issue to deal with, I think. But,
right.
So the playoffs, like I said, they begin Saturday. Do you still get as fired up as always for the fun of the postseason?
Well, I think what I get excited about And it really doesn't matter if it's a regular season game like tonight, Denver, Minnesota, or if it's the playoffs that start this weekend. I just love to watch guys who are great competitors.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them. And so when you get to see a great competitor or two teams that really compete hard against each other, it's a lot of fun. And regardless of how the games turn out, when it's superior competition, it's a lot of fun to watch, whatever the sport may be.
Do you? I know ESPN this year has the, I mean, obviously you get the finals, but you have the Eastern Conference Finals, TNT gets the West. Do you have a preference on that? Do you say, oh, it would be nice to do Rockets because they're so hot, or you get LeBron and that's all you need, or you don't pay attention to it, you just do your job?
Well, I would like to be doing all Houston games because that's home. So
right.
If I don't have to get on in a plane or a TSA line, that's preferable. But it's my view, like that this year, the finals is the Western Conference Finals. You know, it's the Warriors, if they can get healthy against the Rockets. I don't see any team from the West being able to beat either of those teams. But the Eastern Conference, I'm interested in because, you know, Toronto has a really good team, like really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the same bracket as Cleveland. And if both win in the first round, I think that'll be a heck of a first round or second round series. So, and then Philadelphia, hey, listen, everything's lining up for them right now.
Yeah.
Because Boston, I think, is a dark horse, or is the underdog. Even though their seed, because of their injury situation, I think they're an underdog in the first round, regardless of who they play.
And then there's LeBron.
Yeah, and LeBron, Cleveland is good. I don't think they're even close to what they've been in the past.
Right.
And he has played some remarkable basketball. And I just don't feel they have any chance of winning a championship this year.
Yeah.
Which I've never felt in the past.
It seems that everyone has to have an opinion on where LeBron ranks all time. And this is such a, you know, I what I find funny is, you know, someone will say Jordan's the best of all time and LeBron's second, as if that's a knock on LeBron. Do you get tired of that argument? Do you think it's tedious, or do you like going back and forth about, you know, where LeBron ranks?
Somebody gave me a line a long time ago. It wasn't about obviously this situation, but comparison is the thief of joy, and it truly is when it comes to these because. As you said, if you say Jordan's better or LeBron's better, what happens is everybody thinks that you're knocking the other guy that you didn't pick. And so it diminishes this other person. And that's why, listen, it's hard. The sport has changed. It's not even the same game. Rules are different. Styles are different. So many things are different. I know this. If there were a top two pick, or let's say there was a lottery, and there was five or six, and you took Jordan and someone else took James and I took Jabbar, guess what? I'm fine with that.
Right.
I get to start my team with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Good. I'm good.
Right.
You know, or Magic or Bird or whoever. And so, you know, a lot of it is, when you were born, where you were born, where you were raised, who you're a fan of. But more so than anything, I think when you start comparing, it diminishes others. And that's why I try to stay out of that sort of who's better.
Yeah. And it's amazing. People, I do think, I don't know why it is, but it does feel like there are some people who just don't want to get, I mean, I know Barkley's famous for not giving LeBron his full due. I don't know what it is about LeBron that.
Well, I'll agree with you there, Jimmy. And not to say anything, I don't know what Barkley feels about LeBron, but because so many people who either coached, played, or were a fan in the era that Jordan was at his, you know, highest point, they're reluctant oftentimes to say just how great James is. And somehow that he's lost in the finals is some, you know, negative on him. Like, come on now. The guy has made seven straight finals. Let's appreciate him for all of his greatness. And you don't have to pick and choose. You can say they're both great.
Right.
I don't understand why you can't. We can't say as basketball fans, hey, they're great. Are they different? Yes. But they have similar characteristics in that they drive winning. And I the one thing I don't like is when we use the term great next to a player that puts up empty stats and doesn't drive winning.
Right.
But both Jordan and James, they drive winning.
Well, the funny thing is, and I'm reluctant to use Twitter as the guide for this, but I will just for this conversation. I will often tweet about finding it remarkable that there are people who don't think LeBron James is still the greatest show on earth, basically, when it comes to sports. And you mentioned earlier, I mean, the year he's had has been insane. And the big knock I get from people on LeBron is that they don't like his whining and complaining to the officials. Now, there's two things about that for me, at least. One, I think every player whines and complains to the officials. And two, can you imagine not fully enjoying what you're witnessing and being alive in this time of LeBron James at the peak of his career? Because you don't like that he complains about – I mean, everybody does. To use that as your reason for not giving him the full due, I find to be – insane, but sports fans are all insane, so it shouldn't be that surprising.
Right, but I would say the thing that to me surprises me where James doesn't get the benefit of the doubt is we always say, you know, we want our athletes not to, you know, to live right. And by all accounts, James, from a very difficult childhood, is a great father. Cares about his community, has done a lot in that way, and has never been in any trouble with the law. I don't think he gets nearly the credit, nor do I think many of our athletes who live these incredibly productive lives off the court, I don't think they get the credit that they deserve.
Under a microscope that's
far different.
Far different.
Far different.
Right.
Than it was back
when Jordan was going to Atlantic City all the time.
Right. And guess what? If the, I'm not a tech guy, but like if those phones were out there that were able to take pictures, they would have evolved and not gone out as much either back then. Because you have no privacy.
Right.
If you're famous to that extent. So I'm amazed, and listen, the whining in the NBA, to me, overall, is like it's an epidemic. And it's awful. And it's has complaining always gone on? Absolutely. Is it different now? Is it more now? I think absolutely. I think for whatever reason, the players feel more emboldened challenge, complain, and go at referees on every single call. And we've lost a lot of strong officials in the past decade and who would never have tolerated people coming at them like they are now.
Right.
And I think the league has backed these players far too much in these skirmishes. Yes. The referees are going through a major rebuild, and there's not enough high-quality NBA officials right now for many various reasons. But when you allow the players or coaches to attack these officials on every single call. And you watch games, Jimmy, every single call, even the obvious ones, are challenged. I think it sets a bad precedent. So this idea that LeBron does it,
right?
Like, he does complain, but he's no different than a lot of these other stars
exactly
in our league right now.
And I would say this, not that you or the NBA would care about this, but I don't know if you're an NFL fan. You watch the NFL on a Sunday, there is not one incomplete pass where a wide receiver isn't asking for pass interference.
If I see a wide receiver do the pantomime throw the flag,
right,
I think that should be a flag automatically. Well, if you do that movement, 15 yards, unsportsmanlike.
The games would be 7 hours long if they did that, Jeff. Every play it's done. It's done on every play. So I wonder if it's more of a, you know, I don't want to sound like an old man, but maybe it's a generational thing, because what you said about the NBA, I agree with, and it's the same thing in the NFL. The officiating's horrible in the NFL, and the players want a flag on every single play, offense and defense. It doesn't matter. It's I don't know, maybe it's just the times. I don't know. It's a weird thing. But the NFL is just as bad as the NBA with that.
I know replay, to me, has hurt. I was a proponent of replay when it came in for both basketball and football, for, like, obvious. And now it keeps expanding to more and more, and I think it's absolutely awful for all the sports. I mean, you're watching, like, college football games. If you can watch a full college football game, you're a better person than I, because, you know, just – the start and the stops, first downs, time, you know, stop the clock. Now we got, you know, a review on every play. It's mind-numbing. And I think what all it's done is caused more and more problems, not fewer problems.
No doubt. That's just a fact. It's funny you went off on that, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I thought you'd have a good answer for this, is, let's say, you know, Adam Silver hits the lottery, decides to retire, and Jeff Van Gundy is made NBA commissioner. What are the first three things you're doing?
That's a good question right there.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to say this. The first thing I would do is I would take away every incentive there is to lose. So what's going on in our NBA right now, to me, is a scandal that because the media believes it's strategy versus a scandal, it gets reported like it's a strategy. Like, no one plays in these games. And unless you come out and say it like Mark Cuban did, and he got fined for it, that we're better off losing than winning, then everybody just winks at each other, acknowledges it, that it's going on, and is okay. And anytime you become okay as a business to not try your best, and I'm not talking about the players on the floor, I'm talking about organizations and then the NBA, which tacitly gives them license to not try their best, I think it's an absolute scandal.
Well, but
the media doesn't, and the media controls the narrative. And because the media is controlled many times by information and by who leaks to who, they report it as strategy. So we got, well, how many teams? 9, 10 teams not trying and haven't been trying for a long time, and we're okay with that? I'm not okay. Right. I think it's... So that would be number one.
Okay.
Number two, I'm going to try to make the rules make more sense. To me, we have a clear path foul, which is trying to prevent teams from taking an intentional foul where the ball handler is ahead of the play because we want action. And yet now we have a proliferation of the European foul to stop transition where we take intentional fouls. And I would try to eliminate any foul or penalize, heavily penalize, like the clear path foul does, with two shots in the ball, any intentional foul before the last 2 minutes where you do take intentional fouls to try to, you know, stop the clock, make teams shoot free throws so you can come back. So that would be number two.
Okay.
I don't really have a third one off the top of my head. you know what the third one would be? You can come in from high school. You can come in any time, and no maximum salaries for players. You can have a cap, and I would have a hard cap, but it would be up to the teams to say, I want to pay LeBron James, if it's $120 million cap, if I want to, I'll pay him $60. But it's a hard cap, no exceptions, and I think that would spread the stars out and stop it from being where these guys want to go and play buddy ball with their friends. Because, hey, in many ways, the system has de-incentivized them from maxing out what their true financial powers are. Like, you know, you would never see Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on the same team if there was a hard cap right. and no maximum salary.
Right. All right. Those are three good ones. Those are intense, those three. I thought maybe we'd have something like get rid of the jump ball.
Well, hey, listen, the auxiliary one would be I'm tired of the old dance crews out there, you know, like every team trots out. The first couple were funny where they trot out the senior dancers, all right, out.
Yes.
Senior dancers, out.
Yeah.
I hate when the shirt-tossing people come out and tell me to get up and make some noise, and then they throw one T-shirt into the stands. Okay,
right.
I don't want that either.
I'm always fascinated what people will do for a free T-shirt.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Remarkable.
Like, listen, like, I'd rather have somebody, like, you know, and then, you know, the third one is if you get a T-shirt and there's a kid within a radius of X amount of seats and you don't hand it over immediately.
Kicked out.
You're ejected.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're ejected.
All right, now we're talking. Now we're rolling. I like those. Hang on, my producer, Lou Pellegrino, wants to chime in here with, he's got a one, I think.
I'm just in total agreement with Jeff because I was at the Garden the other night for the Knicks game against the Milwaukee Bucks and I'm sitting there in the radio booth area. And sure enough, the Knicks City Dancers come out. And I'm not bringing up the Knicks, Jeff, because, you know, of your ties to them, but that's where I was at. And they start this dancing. And all I keep thinking about is, I was here in 1994 for the NBA Finals. And there's nothing better than sitting in Madison Square Garden. The lights go down. The laser light show starts on the court. The fans are going nuts. And then they have the Go New York song. And then they have, there's nothing better than that.
Right.
And I'm watching the Knicks City Dancers. And I'm like, no. Broadway in Midtown is where this has to take place, not at Madison Square Garden. Let the fans create that loudness because they put everybody to sleep because it's a dance troupe. It's not like that electric energy that you get at a Knick game.
Well, I'm going to say this. Going back to what you just said, it brought back great memories. I forgot who wrote the song and who sang the song.
Go New York, Go.
Go New York, Go song. To this day, if I run into an opponent who played us in the playoffs back then, one of the first things they talk about after they talked about how many times we hit people on every possession is that song at timeouts. Like, the electricity of winning in New York and winning in the style and manner that those Knick teams did, when that song played, nothing like it.
Jeff, if you want the hair to stand up on the back of your neck, I'm telling you, when you have time before your meetings with Breen and with Mark and with everybody and all that stuff, go on YouTube and just type in 1994 or 1999 Knicks introduction.
He was there.
At the
I
finals.
Think he remembers.
But
it.
I'm just saying you can recapture that moment and you just see it from a different point of view, as a fan point of view. And I get tears in my eyes when I watch it because that's the way it used to be. And not saying I'm one of these get off my lawn guys, but that's the way it should be at New York at Madison Square Garden with the Knicks. Even whatever their record is, that's the way it should be, not the way it is now.
Well, I'll say this too, and people always ask me about the great arenas in the NBA, and there are, you know, like very loud arenas and incredible support by, you know, like you go to Oklahoma City, it's very loud, and Golden State, even when they lost way back, they always had great fan support, and the Lakers have had diehards. There is no place like Madison Square Garden. The old Chicago Stadium was as close to Madison Square Garden as you could get for a vibe and a loudness and an intensity. But listen, that's why everybody still, no matter how good the Knicks are or how much they struggle in any one season, the place is packed and players love to play there because there's no other place like Madison Square Garden.
I have a lot of Knicks stuff that I was going to save towards the end because I figured that would be fun at the end. I wanted to get to stuff with Breen and Marv and announcing, but I'll flip it now. So since we're on the Knicks, I think one of the problems that the Knicks have is that the place is always sold out. I think if fans stop showing up, maybe that would cause them to do things differently because they've been an embarrassment for so long. But if the cash is still rolling in, what's the impetus to change?
Well,
it's sold out every night, and the team's unwatchable.
Yeah, I know what
the
you're
team's
saying,
unwatchable.
My point on that is, you know, for so long everyone said, "Hey, Jim Dolan should get out of the decision making process." And if you can believe what you read, he has. And so I don't think it's a lack of trying to win. You know, the thing that people don't realize about Jim Dolan, like when he was my boss. He really wasn't he wasn't pestering you as a coach, but the thing that you always appreciated was, and not every owner is like this, he would spend as much as you needed to try to win, whether that was paying a player, how you did your practice facility, a charter jet, whatever it is. To me, that commitment to winning was there from ownership. And I think what the Knicks are going through is, they had that period where they had Carmelo and Kidd and Chandler, and they had a good run, right, with, Mike Woodson.
It was an okay run. A good might be a stretch.
No, it was good.
Here's the problem. The problem is, too, it's always going to be compared to when you and Pat Riley were there. That was a good run.
That
was
right.
A great run.
But here's the difference, though, and this is what people never want to talk about.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the tanking and not trying your best. It's hard to get good from being bad. That's why a lot of teams who get bad, they stay bad for a while.
Yeah.
And the Knicks, when you lose incredible, talented players like a Ewing and like an Oakley and like a Larry Johnson and a Derek Harper and all those guys, right? And Starks, it becomes Houston and Sprewell, I want to put in there as well.
Yeah.
It's hard to get back to being good. Everyone says, hey, should we blow it up? Should we do this? It sounds good. Very few fan bases, very few organizations have the stomach to go through a Philly-like rebuild. And that had no guarantee of working either.
Right.
But they are now on the other side. But the pain they went through was like awful basketball for a long, long period of time. You know, the Knicks are just showing you how hard it is to rebuild. So they got Porzingis, excellent pick. Phil Jackson doesn't get enough credit for that one, I don't believe. And yet then he gets hurt, which puts him back, you know, maybe another season. And so, listen, it's hard to rebuild. It's hard to win, and it's hard to get good. And you know, I feel for the Knicks.
I have to say, I'm a little disappointed. You've now said good things about Dolan and Phil Jackson. I was kind of hoping we could, you know. I mean, Big Chief Triangle to me is still your favorite, your best line of all time. When you called,
you know what?
Chief Triangle as a Knicks fan, I can't tell you the pride and the happiness I felt that someone would say that.
That was like a spur of the moment. I didn't really, you know.
That's a great line.
It turned out to have staying power, but it wasn't my finest moment in that, you know, I'm belittling this other guy for, you know, whatever. I mean, hey, listen, those Bulls, Knicks, Miami, Knicks, Indiana, those were special rivalries.
Yeah.
And, you know, things sometimes got a little heated.
A little.
But. Yeah, but you know what? When I look back, I always say this, Tom Thibodeau is now the president and coach of Minnesota. He once worked in the NBA for Jerry Tarkanian during that his short stint in San Antonio. So Jerry goes back to college coaching, and but him and Tom stayed close. And so we were playing Miami for the fourth straight year, and he called Tom right before the series started. He goes, listen, I've already picked out the menu for that night for each of those games. I know who I'm going to invite over, who's not invited over. This is must-see TV. And to come from another coach who was so accomplished
right.
that he would build his week around Knicks Heat playoffs, that's pretty special.
Absolutely. That was a very special time, very special. But I also, I mean, you know, if Dolan is not as, you know, in New York, Dolan is probably the most hated sports figure, I would say. And I was always under the impression that you would never consider coming back to the Knicks because of Dolan, but now you're telling me he left you alone and he spent money. So why can't you coach the Knicks?
Oh, yeah, you know, listen.
Why can't you coach the Knicks?
I don't know.
Let's go.
I don't know, you know, anything about how the Knicks run now or, like, any of that sort of stuff. All I'm saying is when I was there, we had every resource we needed to win and to try to win. And I think ownership oftentimes gets criticized for being, you know, cheap in many, you know, organizations around the country, and rightfully so. But in New York, never. Like, price was never mentioned. So, it was always, can this make us better? Does this give us a better chance to win? And we always had that freedom in New York.
If the Knicks make a coaching change, can we put you in the mix as a possibility?
Listen, Jeff Hornacek.
No.
First of all, I don't play those like, would you be interested? Because it's foolish to get into that.
All right, so,
but let me just speak about Jeff Hornacek. Anytime you make a coaching change, right? I don't care what organization it may be. If all you do is change the coach, you're not going to change your results. People always say it's a player's league, right?
Right.
And then they expect magical changes by just changing the coach. It's silly. It's foolhardy. I'm going to tell you this. I look out at New York. I don't say to myself, oh, man, what they're doing makes no sense. I think they're a well-coached team. I think they need to continue to upgrade their talent. And I think Scott Perry and Steve Mills realize the same thing. I mean, that's why they're taking shots at Moutier and Trey Burke. And give them credit. They've resurrected Trey Burke's career. And so, you know, that's what they need to do, be able to hit on a couple of these things.
All right, so let's do this. If they make a move and they let go of Hornacek, can you come back on the podcast just so I can ask you if you'd be interested in the next job?
You can ask me anything you want, and I will give you a non-answer every single time.
Fair enough. Yeah. Here's my biggest beef with Dolan more than anything as a Knicks fan. The guy fired the single greatest announcer in the history of the NBA. How the hell do you do that? How do you fire Marv Albert? Like, that to me, he may, you know, give you all the money and leave you alone, but that was like such a telling thing for me when he fired Marv. You can't do that.
Yeah. Well, again, I can't speak to the. When did that happen?
Oh, that was they didn't like Marv was critical of the Knicks, so they said goodbye.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what year?
It's been a very long time.
Back, right?
Yeah, because then he did the Nets for a while.
When I went to work between New York and Houston,
right?
For 1 year, I worked with Marv Albert and Mike Fratello, three-man booth in TNT.
Right.
And I can honestly say I had very few conversations with Marv my entire 13 years with the Knicks. Like when I say rare, I mean never really.
Right.
And at times I got put off by, like, I thought he was too harsh on our players, Ewing in particular, in comparison to a Jordan-like figure, right?
Right.
But then when I got on the other side, I understand. That's his job,
right,
is just to say what he sees. Now, that doesn't mean he was always right or I would agree with everything, but that's his job.
And having said, and just, I mean, as someone who follows stuff, I mean, no offense to you, Marv is not thought of someone who's unfair to players either. I mean, I get you're protecting your guy, and I think Patrick Ewing is the most underappreciated athlete in the history of New York sports. But, I, you know, like you said, Marv's just doing his job there. And, I would – there's other –
when you're coaching, you're coaching or you're playing, you're looking at it through a different lens.
Absolutely.
Than a typical fan. And so I guess what I really appreciated, though, was even though Marv and I really didn't have any, like, major relationship, and the conversations we did have were usually about how I didn't think it was fair how Ewing was treated on the broadcast, he was the one that pushed for me to get a job with TNT when he never had to do it. And I learned so much in that year from both he and Mike and the producer, Scooter Vertino.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible. When you coach, like, you don't realize what they do and what they make the hard look very easy. And so, yeah, Marv, like, is legendary for all the right reasons, you know, because he was, I mean, I'm not really qualified to say who's the best, but, man, that guy is so prepared, so good at what he does, and I can't believe he's still doing it today.
And still great.
He's still
going
strong.
Yep.
Yeah.
My producer tells me he was let go from MSG. That was 2004, so that's 14 years ago. It's been a while.
Wow. Long time.
And it's funny, when you were a coach, you probably never thought you'd say that about announcers, giving them sort of a little benefit of the doubt there, which is funny. But you're obviously blessed because you work with Marv when you were TNT, and now you have Breen at ESPN, and it doesn't get much better than it doesn't get any better than those two.
Well, when you think about it, like, I work with Mark Jackson, who I coached,
right,
Doris Burke, who I've known since Providence College days way back, and Mike, who was our broadcaster with the Knicks, both radio and TV.
Yep.
So to me, to work with people that you truly like is such a great benefit, particularly when you're doing a job like a second job, right? And you have no knowledge of the job. You don't know how to do the job. And they try to help you. It's just, that's been, you know, truly the special part about working in broadcasting for ESPN. You know, the basketball is one thing, but what I appreciate is the people I get to do it with.
That's a great, I mean, everyone loves Breen. It's a great listen. Have you ever, you've said some, what's the word, offbeat things over the years every now and again. We know you gave Rihanna a nice shout out and stuff like that.
Hold on. I have to, everybody says that's offbeat. I would say if anybody saw her walking directly in front of them, no matter what was going in their life, they would have stopped, gasped, and, like, noticed.
Fair enough.
So I don't – right?
Mike, right, fair enough. I'll rephrase it. You've sometimes ventured away from just talking about basketball during a game. Has ESPN ever said anything to you about that? You don't have to, if you don't want to get into the specifics, but has there ever been a oh, really?
But not often. I would say this. So Tim Corrigan, who is my producer, and above him is Mark Gross, right? Those are the guys I deal with the most,
right?
There. Very rarely. I mean, they'll sometimes say, hey, the NBA wasn't happy with.
Oh, God.
You know, this, like,
right.
One time I mentioned David Stern's salary on the air, you know, and, you know, they weren't happy with that, or he wasn't happy with that, maybe, I don't know.
Right.
And then the one that I remember that stands out that I got a call on was I had some comments about the Masters, and it was during a promo for the Masters. And so the executives were in the room at the Masters with the Masters people. And, you know, I said some things that in hindsight weren't probably the best for the business.
Right.
But they were great. They just said, don't do it again. You know,
right.
You know, but listen, they give you like, now they give you a lot of rope. Now you may like get yourself in trouble, but they never try to over, what's that called? Like they don't try to
overmanage getting your ear.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. I mean, not at all.
Yeah.
In fact, they give me more freedom than I would give myself, I think.
I want you to have more freedom.
Unfiltered. I don't think that would be good for anybody. Like, you know, so, but no, they've been, I would say like, and I would say TNT was good like that too. Like they, I had this feeling it was going to be much more, when I came into the broadcasting, that it was much more regimented.
Right.
And it's really not like that. Like, you know, and I think the play-by-play guys do a great job, Mike. He'll get us back on topic when we veer off. Like Dave Pasha, we work with occasionally too, and he works with Walton.
Yep.
He has a great line. He always says, "Now back to the game." You know, when it gets too far off the rails.
Right.
So,
right.
But I think the idea that, you know, and some, you know, you don't try to like tell a fan what they want to hear. So some fans just want basketball talk. They don't want anything that delves away from just X and O basketball talk. Other people want, you know, to laugh a little bit. And so the good part is we don't try to force it out or figure it out. We just talk about whatever comes up, whatever before us in the game. And maybe if it gets to be a blowout, we talk about other stuff as well.
Well, NBA also lends itself to it. It's just, it's a fun league. You know, baseball's a little stuffy and, you know, the NFL thinks they're basically, you know, curing cancer. The NBA is a fun league. So it lends itself, I think, to, you know, Rihanna's there on the front row. How do you not, like you said, how do you not comment?
No, listen, a lot of people have given me a lot of grief over that. And I just say, if you switched seats to me with me, you would have done the same thing.
Well, what about when you? Yeah. I mean, you've had some good rants about the refs. You ever hear from the NBA on that or ESPN?
The one thing I would say is, like, I was taught long ago by my college coach that there are three teams on the floor every night. There are, you know, the two teams competing against each other and the referee team.
Right.
And they're all equally important to the outcome of the game. And so because I think they're so important to the outcome of the game, their calls, I think, rightfully should be scrutinized. Arrogance should be scrutinized. Hubris should be scrutinized.
Right.
And yet, I think I was much, like, I wasn't hard to officiate as a head coach. I rarely got technicals. I got thrown out once my entire, you know, career.
Was that when you when you ran on the court and got?
No, I didn't get thrown out there. Oh, I got thrown out when I told Joey Crawford in a Miami game at Miami that we lost by one, that he called a flagrant foul on Charlie Ward with like 16 seconds left because he was trying to catch a flight out. like I told him, he's the one. I didn't use these words.
Right.
He was the one that screwed up the game, not me. So don't stare at me. And so that was a one technical ejection.
So you went on the court and grabbed the guy's leg, and you didn't get injected in that whole thing?
But that was
before.
I would say this.
Was that before the leave the bench rule came in?
No. You could, as a coach, you could always leave the bench. Just the other players could.
Okay, I got it.
But so people always ask me what I was thinking about, and I was saying, I always now know why criminals plead, you know,
temporary insanity.
Yeah. Because I have no recollection, and I know I look like a fool now. But getting back to the officiating, I wasn't hard on them as a coach, but I was hard on them initially when I came to ESPN. But there's been nobody, like, I don't talk about the officials nearly at all now. And almost always in not defense of their calls, but in how they should be able to defend themselves against these unwarranted, you know, verbal attacks. So, I think actually, you know, the NBA has called me a couple, not me, but they call my bosses, you know, way back, maybe 5-6 years ago.
Right.
But now I'm like I'm a brother in arms with the referees. They love me. Yeah.
What, give me something, you don't have to name names, but is when you're watching an NBA game, is there something that announcers do that you don't like? What's like your pet peeve for announcers that you wish announcers didn't do?
Talk on every play. Explain something, like if there's a, you know, a fast break that needs no explanation, trying to explain what doesn't need to be explained.
Right.
You know, Tim Corrigan, my producer, he said something to me, and I know people probably feel I violate this a lot, but I try not to, is no one ever complains at the end of a broadcast that an announcer talked too little.
Excellent. Yep. That's true.
Yeah. And so that has always stuck in my head, and Mike gave me one that I'll always remember too. Don't use the word great when it was just good.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Good. I got two last questions, and they're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum. The first one, this year we've seen it with Popovich and Kerr a lot, where they have dipped into politics and given strong opinions on things going on in this country. If you were coaching, would you be doing that, or would you be staying out of it? If you were a coach, obviously you're at ESPN, you can't do it.
Right. My brother is, he's delved into that too.
Yes,
I think,
yes.
I think you have to ascertain to yourself, like, what type of relationship you have with your ownership, what they expect, because you don't want to hurt their business. And I think in each of those cases, Kerr, Pop, and my brother, their ownership have not necessarily encouraged them to do it, but haven't discouraged them from doing it. I don't know if all three of those guys seem to me to be very, very smart and very, very well read. And if I was to comment on something of that seriousness, I would make sure that I was, if I was going to do it, I'd have to be sure that I was well read and I had some nuance to my thought process.
Yeah, it does. I mean, listen, I'm obviously, maybe I'm not objective on it because I'm usually on the side of what they're saying, but they do it very well. So
exceptionally well.
Yes.
I mean, and again, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I'm for, like, again, I have no problem with, you know, from a broadcasting standpoint, even if I disagree with somebody, if they come out and they are on the other side of how I see something, as long as it's, you know, reasonable, it's well thought out, and it's not an attack-based type thing.
Yeah.
I think everybody should, I mean, we live in the world. They should be able to, talk about issues that impact the world.
All right, now we're going to go to the complete opposite end of the spectrum and go back to a time when you were doing a game and did not just stick to calling the basketball game. I am a diehard, longtime Howard Stern fan. And you got on Howard for leaving a Knick game early, and he destroyed you on his show. Were you made aware that he had, like, did you get wind that he was ripping you and he didn't appreciate you calling him out? And did you know when you called him out, you were calling out a guy who has a radio show where he can, you know, verbally assault
first
you, basically?
Well, I never thought, like, I was joking. Like, if you look,
right.
I was joking about it. So I didn't think twice of it, or twice about it. But, the funny thing is, so I don't know if he did it the next day or I don't know when he went off on me, but I remember I was back in Houston and, you know, the definition of a loser is to go to the matinee by yourself and be the only one in the theater. And that was me on that day. And so I'm sitting there with my M&Ms and popcorn and drink, watching some movie, and I get this call. Now, usually you don't pick up the phone in the middle of the movie, but when you're the only one in there, it's acceptable, right?
Right.
I pick up the phone. Because it was a friend of mine who happens to be from New York. And he says to me, Stern just crushed you. And he tells me the lines, right?
Right.
Now, I didn't think it was Howard Stern. I thought it was David Stern.
Oh.
And so
that's
I
great.
Said to him, I said, man, that's not very commissioner-like. And he goes, well, I won't say what he said, but he said, you know, basically called me an idiot. And he goes, no, Howard Stern.
Right.
And so that was funny. Like, you know, cause I didn't know he was still on. Cause when I was in New York, I forgot what station would he have been on?
K-Rock. But anyway, 92.3 K-Rock.
Right, so he was like, yeah. And I guess he's moved to Sirius. Is that right?
I hope you're kidding.
No, I'm saying, is that what he's on?
Yes, he's on Sirius XM.
Right, right, right. So he's got his own show, channel, whatever it is, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, I don't have satellite radio, so I don't, But the point is like, yeah, this guy was just killing me. But the bigger issue was I was sitting by myself in a movie theater.
When like you found
out. The definition of a loser, thinking it was David Stern, not Howard Stern.
All right, that's a perfect way to wrap up this podcast. Yeah, he was relentless, but it was funny. It was good radio. Didn't like that you called him out for leaving early. From the good seats, no less. It was, yeah, I think that's what set him off, too, is he was in the good seats and he left early. So
no, he was right next to us.
Yeah.
Right next to us. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate you coming on. It was nice. Also, I found out you're a longtime reader of my stuff on SI, so I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
To
the stuff you guys do, like that... the videos that you show of things that I normally would not ever see.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's fun to read.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And maybe we'll get you on again, maybe during the finals or something like that. The NBA playoffs begin Saturday. Jeff Van Gundy will call them for ESPN, Eastern Conference Finals, and the NBA Finals. Do you have a prediction on the NBA Finals before we wrap?
Houston. Wins it all.
All right. Yep. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.
My thanks to Jeff Van Gundy of ESPN as he gets ready to call the NBA playoffs. Before we get to Conrad Thompson from Something to Wrestle With and the big news that they're going to the WWE Network, let me tell you this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is sponsored by Buffalo Wild Wings. There's a new boss in town in Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. It's the Bacon Boss Burger featuring bacon three different ways and a blanket of white cheese sauce. And he's joined by other new favorites like the smothered cheesesteak quesadilla, sweet chili shrimp, and Alaska cod classic. All pair perfectly with a Sam 76, a fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today and try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Available for a limited time while supplies last. And please... drink responsibly. All right, joining me now, one of the hosts of I Think the Greatest Podcast Ever, Something to Wrestle With. I have written and talked about it numerous times, and now they have some monstrous news. Conrad Thompson. Conrad, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am great. I want to have you back on for like a longer like State of the Union on Something to Wrestle With because it just keeps growing and growing. But with the news now of this WWE partnership, I figured I'd have you on like to get the basic facts here and the gist of what's going on. So it's going to be called Something Else to Wrestle With, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. And Something Else to Wrestle With Bruce Pritchard.
And everyone's freaking out because they think it's the podcast, but this is a totally separate deal, correct?
That's exactly right. The podcast is not changing. It's not going away. The WWE is not involved. Absolutely nothing changes on the podcast. It's business as usual, Fridays at noon Eastern.
And what do we know about the WWE Network show? How often is it going to run? What's the concept?
Sure, absolutely. So here's the scoop. There's 13 episodes, just like a traditional television show. We're going to essentially do seasons, and we only have one season because we're sort of testing it out to see what the fans' response is. We obviously had a lot of success in driving traffic for the WWE Network. They would see a spike on their end whenever we would cover a show in particular. All of a sudden, they could see randomly this show from 98 or 88 or 2008 was blowing up. And so when people started to scratch their head and said, hey, what's causing this? Well, it was Something to Wrestle. So they thought, what better way than to reach out and try to create some synergy? So we went round and round about what the show might be. And what we settled on is a weekly format, 13 episodes running 60 to 90 minutes in length. And it's not going to be WWE produced, meaning... we're not flying anywhere. I'm shooting my part from my home. He's shooting his part from his home. There's no censorship. We talk about whatever we want to talk about. Adult language will be in there. Controversial topics will be in there. And there's absolutely no sort of creative control from WWE. In a perfect world, we would see some footage that they own and then we sort of talk over it. I think that would be the best possible compliment.
Wow.
Rather than us describing what's happening and you have to just listen, maybe you could actually watch. And I would like if there were sort of complimentary links in that same network page. That was my idea, to say, hey, if we're talking about the Million Dollar Man,
right,
why don't we have some clips in here? But if you want to see the whole form of that show that we're covering, maybe it's his match at WrestleMania 4. Well, let's include that in a link so you could sort of enjoy the podcast and then have at your fingertips all the things we reference that are also on the network. Whether or not we can actually get all that going,
right, it
still remains to be seen. But I love the idea of us sort of piggybacking what they already have there, because there's so much great content on the network.
Yep.
But it is a bit of a chore to navigate sometimes. So if we can make that easy, I think Something to Wrestle is the perfect compliment for them.
As a diehard fan of the podcast, the thing you said that made me the happiest was 60 to 90 minutes in length. I think that's important because, you know, I've noticed with the network, they have some really great – I'll give you an example. They did the is it called – not Dinner for Three. Table for Three.
Table for Three.
And they have
short.
They have them at Cornette. I wanted that thing to be a minimum of an hour. And it was like 12 minutes. I was like, what the hell is going on here? So I'm happy to hear 60 to 90 minutes for sure.
Well, and I think a lot of that is because it's still in the WWE vacuum. You know, you've got all of that sort of being produced, and they've got plenty of time to put it together. But it happens with WWE cameras and WWE lighting rigs and WWE scripts and WWE producers. This is just going to be a camera at his house and a camera at my house,
right,
and we're off and running. And it's going to look and feel unlike anything else on the network. It won't be very slick. It won't be very polished. It's
right,
going to be gritty and underground. And, you know, it's still going to have a rebellious feel to it, as well it should, because we're going to use foul language and tell everybody what kind of chocolate Vince McMahon likes, et cetera, et cetera.
It's so funny that I'm just thinking about my experiences at SI.com, and you use slick and pretty, and it's like, you know, the people in charge think everyone wants slick and pretty, but I know the videos for us that people watch that are usually a hit are not slick and pretty. And, you know, it sounds, you know, the network, they're trying to do slick and pretty, and then here you guys are going to come in and show them what's up. So the policy you have for the podcast is no guests. Is that the same for something else to wrestle with?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No guests. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, will there be a live version of this one day? Maybe, but that's not the plan right now.
Right.
Would there be something where we're doing our WrestleMania or SummerSlam show, you know, live with guests? Maybe, but that's not the plan right now. The plan right now is 13 episodes that are filmed at my house and his house, stitched together, and hopefully some WWE footage to complement it, just to sort of show you what we're talking about. But that's the plan. And really, if I'm honest, that's probably the reason we were selected to do this. You know, they sent out a questionnaire to a lot of podcasts or a lot of network subscribers last year.
Oh,
yes. Said, hey, would you be interested in having, you know, a podcast option?
Right.
And they got good feedback from that, clearly, because they're moving forward with it. Well, let's take a minute and think about, hey, if they had Stone Cold Steve Austin on, which they have before, that means they would have to fly Stone Cold in, and then he would have to fly a guest in, and they'd have to coordinate the guests and the times. That becomes a chore to do that on a weekly basis. With Bruce and I, our podcast sort of lends itself to, well, we don't need guests, and if we just set up one camera stationary at my house, one camera stationary at his house, we're pretty much all set and good to go. And we're not going to talk about country music, or we're not going to talk about Kiss or Hunting Knives or anything else. We're going to talk about the WWE. Our show is mostly WWE, 99% of it, with the exception of a little global here, a little Houston there, and maybe some TNA. But for the most part, it's all WWE and with no guests. So our show just became probably a little easier to put together than some of those others.
I'm not even kidding you. I think I filled out that survey now that you mentioned it. I remember something from them. I think what everyone wants to know, too, is how the deal came about. I think wrestling fans want to know, you know, was Vince involved? Was Stephanie involved? Was Triple H involved? Was Shane involved? Or was this, you know, the WWE's, you know, digital media department? Or did you deal with anyone whose names wrestling fans would know?
A lot of the office listens, and I've known they listen since certainly October of 2016. I went to WrestleMania, and I went to Royal Rumble in 2017. And in Royal Rumble, I had dozens of guys come over and sort of look both ways and be like, hey, man, I love your podcast, but not wanting to say it too loud. Writers, assistants, people on the staff, a lot of the boys, things like that. And, you know, lots of people, when we put together the Houston Relief Special last year, I reached out to because we had DM'd. They told me they were a big fan. And some of the guys would participate, but way more said they didn't want to because they didn't want heat because we were still, quote-unquote, taboo amongst the office. But then something along the way changed their opinion where they thought we need content and we probably need content that we can create with some regularity that's fairly cost-effective. So a podcast came up, and I think our format lent itself to, well, hey, this is interesting, and, you know, hashtag humble brag, we had more downloads than everybody. So right. If we've got the buzz and we're easy to produce, maybe this is the right fit. So they reached out to us, not the other way around, because Bruce really did believe he was blackballed forever. And that conversation happened before Bruce was on the 25th anniversary of Raw. But once we knew we were at least in talks with them about maybe doing something down the road, it made it very easy for him to accept that opportunity to go be Brother Love in January. So that weekend, he spent a lot of time catching up with his great friend Shane McMahon. And, of course, he's friendly with a lot of people who are still there. But most of all, John Bradshaw Layfield, who is a huge champion for us and a good friend of Kevin Dunn's and has the ear of Vince McMahon. So when they started talking about podcasts, I'm sure that JBL championed us and campaigned for us a little bit. And apparently the feedback when they sort of polled the people in the office was really strong. They all agreed they loved it and that it was the best. So they reached out, made an offer. We went back and forth with that offer and then finally came to terms. But this has been, you know, probably 4 or 5 months in the making before it's ever actually announced. So there's a lot of people who love our podcast who think, oh, well, we're going to sell out. It's not going to be the same, and now that they know WWE is listening, they've got to be conscious of that. You know, candidly, this is 5 months old. It's 5 days old to a lot of listeners.
Right.
But we've known about it for 5 months, and if you didn't notice a change in the last 5 months, it's because nothing changed. And specifically, we had a couple of WWE executives, and I don't want to reveal names, but big folks within the company who were at our show backstage and then sort of took a spot on the side of the stage to live stream it to you-know-who, and you know who I'm talking about,
yes,
and they got to see the energy and the reaction, and they were blown away with it. So even though they may not understand it because maybe their age group and their age demographic isn't really into podcasts, they know when something has the hot hand, so to speak, and we have it right now. So they wanted it, and they'll want more of it, or so we hope. So we're going to do everything we can to sort of load these first 13 episodes up, make them home runs for them, and hopefully get this thing going for season 2, 3, 4, and beyond.
Well, and like you said earlier, I mean, listen, whether they're into podcasts or know about podcasts, I'm sure, for example, I mean, one of the great episodes you guys have done recently was the Saturday night main event with the Hebner referee switch. I would imagine when they saw the numbers on how many people went back and then watched that or part of that on the network, whether they're into podcasts or not. And, you know, I'm sure Vince sees those numbers and he's like, you know, goddamn, pal, why are all these people watching this? You know, the answer is very, very simple. Something to wrestle with.
Yeah. And I hate to use this term, you know, I just hate buzzwords like this, but essentially what we are is a brand influencer. And
yes.
So, you know, there's all these millennials who have YouTube channels and they've got tons of subscribers, and even I'm a little too old to really understand, like, what the hell are we watching? Why do people like this? But if they're plugging a specific product or service, and they're being paid handsomely to do so, but the company sees a giant return, then they're going to go back to that well again. And now, you know, that they can sort of see that we did that without them ever paying us to do that, but we were doing it because it's what we all grew up and loved, and we knew that there was an appetite for it. But nobody was really celebrating what's already there. I think WWE spends a lot of time and energy focusing on how can we create new matches and new angles and new characters and new storylines that captivate the audience. But a lot of our listeners, and I'm sure people who listen to your show, grew up liking wrestling.
Yep.
They really couldn't care less with what's going on right now.
Yep.
Well, why not have something that caters to them? Something to wrestle is the answer for that, in my opinion.
And it's the diversity of your audience in terms of age. I mean, you know, it's people from, you know, one of my best friends who works at, you know, SNY TV on air as a personality. So he's a huge fan. And you got my boss who runs all of Sports Illustrated is a huge fan. I mean, if you grew up in the 80s watching wrestling, I don't understand how you would not listen to Something to Wrestle With. And once you listen to it, obviously you're going to get hooked. So I'm the only thing I'm amazed about is it took the WWE this long to come around. But what's been the I know, I guess, just from, you know, sort of doing what I do, writing a column on the internet, having a podcast, I would imagine you're getting a lot of, you know, oh, it better be the same, don't sell out, that kind of nonsense when, you know, it hasn't even aired yet. What's the overall frame? I mean, are you getting more of that than people saying they can't wait for this? Or is it more excitement than, you know, people who don't know better and how the business works criticizing?
More cynicism, more negativity than positivity. But we expected that. You know, we're a little bit of... You know, it's sort of a Nickelback situation where, you know, everybody says Nickelback sucks, and I can't believe you listen to Nickelback, but yeah, somehow they sold tens of millions of records.
Right.
And maybe it was a deal where they were really hot for a minute, and then all of a sudden it wasn't so cool to like them because everyone else did. And maybe that's a little bit what this is now, and they feel like we're abandoning them, but we're not. You know, the real motivation, and I think me and you talked about this before, but the motivation for starting the podcast was to sell mortgages.
Right.
You know, I buy advertising from a mortgage company, and so I'm writing checks for radio and television advertising just to generate leads. So I thought, hey, man, why not, instead of paying another host to sort of lend me his credibility with the audience, why don't I create my own audience and then just use my own credibility with that audience and create some mortgage loans? And that was the whole idea. Well, now the idea with the network is not all that different. The idea is now, let's get people hooked on the podcast, just like you said. We'll make them love our video product and say, how can I get more of this?
Right.
And then hopefully a large portion of that 2.2 million subscriber base that the WWE Network has decides to check out the regular, original, traditional podcast. And to their surprise, by that point, they'll be nearly 100 episodes. So yeah. At that point, now we've got a real business model, and we can service that in a huge way. This is not an effort to do away with the podcast.
Of
We're
course.
Doing this in an effort to grow the podcast.
It's amazing. People can't comprehend that this is, I mean, I saw it all over Twitter. I saw it on all the articles about it. This is not the podcast. This is something different. And I don't know. People still can't comprehend it, which is strange. But listen, the last thing you need is my advice. But all you have to do on that first episode is, you know, let Bruce drop a goddamn pal and then, you know, ask him something about Triple H and tell him to get the chapstick ready. And I think people will realize that the WWE is not pulling the strings here and influencing what the show's going to be.
No, you're exactly right. You know, in the very first episode, you know, people think we're not going to do certain things. I may mention Hulk Hogan and Chris Benoit and China and flip the camera off and do a Jim Cornette impression. And ask Vince what his favorite dessert is, and read the Observer word for like 10 minutes. You know, this is not the destination for us, and I think a lot of people thought that Bruce was so desperate to be back with WWE that he would do anything to be back there.
Right.
No, the reality is, we want to do that for the same reason I want to do this. You're with Sports Illustrated, brother. This is good for the podcast. You're darn right. I want to do this.
Right,
well,
right.
I want to do it with WWE Network too. So. It's promotion for us, and the people who've sort of lost that just really don't understand the way it works. Look,
they'll be fine.
Stern guy. Yeah. I'm a Howard Stern guy. The E Show didn't kill his radio show; it made it bigger.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good analogy. Good analogy. Do we know what the first episode is going to be, or you still have to work that out?
Well, what we're going to try to do is revisit some of our older episodes.
Okay.
You know, when we first started the show, we didn't really have a feel for what we were going to wind up being. So we sort of towed the line of, well, they say podcasts should be like an hour and 15. So we did a short run on Dusty Rhodes. He deserves better.
Yeah.
We did a short run on The Ultimate Warrior. He deserves better. I think the Vince McMahon, Million Dollar Man airplane story is the best story in the history of the podcast and deserves to be in video form. So we're going to do that one. But I want to start with something that our podcast faithful listeners have never heard before. So we're thinking WrestleMania 14 might be the very first one.
Okay.
There's so much rumor and innuendo about The Undertaker taping his fists up in case Shawn Michaels didn't want to do business. Shawn was on his way out. Austin's on fire. there's a lot of interesting stuff that happened at WrestleMania 14. So that's probably our first topic. Okay. And then we'll cruise through some of the hits, like a Bret Hart 97 or a Shawn Michaels 95.
All right. Can I make a request?
Absolutely.
I need, give me anything on Jim Cornette. I'll take it. I think, I still to this day think your Cornette one is the best something to wrestle with ever. And there is, I don't think there's a better character than Jim Cornette.
No, I absolutely love that impression. I think it's the funniest one. Before we ever did a podcast, and you know, Bruce and I were just working together on the mortgage side of things, he would do the impression around the office, and even people who didn't know who Jim Cornette was thought the voice was hilarious, the delivery was hilarious. And once you know who it is, it just takes on a life of its own. So,
but and it's also, yeah. I mean, the you know, if you come out of a box, you're over. And then the story about, what was it? His mouse died. His rat. What was the
rat? The yeah, rat. George the rat.
I mean that episode. And then of course, you know, the Wendy's. It's just that episode to me is, that's one where I think I've listened to it three times. Like after a few months, I'm like, let me listen to that again. It's so good.
Awesome.
I do re-listen to that one, I must say. Is there a debut date for the show?
Well, listen, they'd like for it to debut sooner than I can even imagine. Yeah. But the reality is they haven't set up the cameras just yet. So okay. I'm going to give us a little bit of leeway for that. Yeah, they're going to be setting up the cameras this Sunday. Okay. And they would like for us to tape our first episode this Monday and for it to air a week from now.
Oh, wow.
But is that realistic? I don't think so. And I don't think so just because we've never used this equipment. We've never uploaded it. We don't exactly know what's going to be required in post to stitch us together and drop in some other footage. And then we've got to actually promote the thing. So in my head, we're probably a couple weeks out, but they are itching to get this on the air, and they'd like to have it on the air later this month. So if it doesn't happen next week, I would expect it within the next 2 weeks.
All right. That's not bad. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. I appreciate you giving me the lowdown. I know you guys never, well, I shouldn't say never. You guys rarely talk about current WWE on the podcast. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you and end this way. What did, and we'll see how loyal you are to the WWE. What did you think of Mania and the Raw after Mania?
I thought when Mania started, about halfway through, I thought they were on track to being one of the best WrestleManias ever. I mean, I really felt like the opener with Seth Rollins was tremendous. Yep. I thought Charlotte had the best women's match in WrestleMania history. I thought there was a lot of really, really great stuff in the first half of the show, and then I think it fell off a cliff. AJ Nakamura was not what I hoped for. I don't know if it was because they were two baby faces or I had unrealistic expectations based on Wrestle Kingdom. I thought the Nikla thing was a cheap but cute pop. I would have preferred to have seen a Rey Mysterio or a Samoa Joe or pretty much anyone other than Nicholas. And the main event, I think they put it in the wrong spot. I'm glad they decided to go the other way since Dana White seemingly gave a spoiler and said, yes, Brock Lesnar's coming back. I felt like you had to keep it on him. But that match was probably doomed before it ever got to the ring. I was a little disappointed that we didn't have a more competitive John Cena match.
Right.
Just because I think that whole big match John thing is real, yep. And he puts on really great performances on a big stage. But if that's limited based on Undertaker's health, then I understand it. If that's what two legends wanted to do, I guess I get it. But it did feel like the show lost a little luster as it went on.
It's so
it was
funny.
Too long.
I felt the same way, and I saw positive reviews for it. I felt, well, first of all, for any something to wrestle with listener who's listening to this podcast, you can see that Conrad is now just going to kiss WWE ass now that he has a show there. So you should be happy about that. And then, you know, I had Roman on this podcast last week. I can't tell you how bad I felt for him, especially when I read, you know, who knows if it's true, rumor and innuendo and all that stuff. But you know, they're saying yesterday that Roman thought he was winning until the match started, and then Vince tells the ref in his ear, tell Roman he's not going over, and you know, then Brock resigns. I feel bad for Roman Reigns. I know he's got this thing with the fans. I've interviewed the guy now. He's been on this my podcast over the years 4 or 5 times. He is such a great guy when he's on the podcast. It's not the guy you see in the arena that's getting booed, and I don't know, I felt terrible for him. And if that's how it went down, then I really feel bad for him. But I think I'm in the minority on that because fans just refuse to give the guy a chance, it seems like.
Well, you know, it's sort of weird because I think, and I can admit this because I used to be a wrestling fan troll. Like when I was an adolescent, I would show up at wrestling matches with signs trying to get, you know, guys' attention. You know, I remember at an ECW show, I held up a sign that said, Jobber, hoping that Skull Von Crush would take it and run with it and make me part of the show. I was a numbskull trying to get myself over and make fun of wrestlers. And I mean, I get that everybody sort of goes through that. You know, I'm standing up to the man, adolescent, teenage phase, and I did that. And now as an adult, I can recognize that sometimes people just want to push against what's being force-fed to them. And if they feel like Roman is, then they're going to push back. But he's in that spot because the majority of fans don't feel that way. They are buying his merchandise. They are supporting him at live events.
Right.
I mean, if he wasn't driving revenue for them, he wouldn't have that spot. That's
right.
Not the way it works. So I do feel bad for him, but not that bad, because that dude's probably the second highest paid on the roster, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know, he's making millions of dollars, and he's getting a reaction.
Yeah.
And so when people say, oh, he's not over, I don't think they really understand what that word means.
Oh, of course.
The opposite of over is indifference.
Yeah.
If there's a response, good or bad, you're over, man.
Exactly.
Roman Reigns is over, and in real life, a great guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree on all that. And the other thing that's over is something to wrestle with, and now it's so over, it's going to be on the WWE Network. Not the same thing, different version. Calm down. Podcast remains the same. It's like a bonus show on WWE Network, 13 episodes. Looking forward to it. Conrad, thank you very much for coming on and giving me the lowdown. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for asking me. I really appreciate it. If anybody would like to interact about wrestling, I would love to interact with you. I'm very active on Twitter. I'm at Hey, it's Conrad.
It's Conrad. Thanks, Conrad. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Take care. All right. My thanks to Jeff Van Gundy and Conrad Thompson both for coming on. Enjoyed both men immensely. Jeff was great. And Conrad, if you're a fan of that podcast, you got a lot of information there. So, and you should be a fan of that podcast if you're a wrestling fan. So I thank both of them for coming on. That wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina, and I will see you next week. Take care.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.